This is show 563 for Thursday, March 23rd. No, May 23rd. Haha. 1785. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and fuck, I don't know. I don't have a joke for closing this out anymore. Tonight we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Not much. I did go to a wedding with two antennas. Ceremony was boring and ostentatious, but the reception was amazing.
Two antennas.
Yeah. Really a crappy joke, but it worked for your lack of joke. Reception was amazing.
Ah. I've been going all day, dude. Sorry.
I just got up, so...
And we have an RU. Go ahead, RU.
Yeah, I just got it too, Morps. I think it's because we were taking everything a little seriously an hour ago. Not a big week. Once again, I'll say I didn't cause the accident, but I did nothing to stop it.
I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. Disables the train.
Pretty much it.
Oh.
The whores and politicians will scream, save us, and I will whisper no.
Sure. Why not? So, anyways, I guess we'll get into this. And actually, I picked this article specifically because they actually explain this a little bit better than some of the other articles that are straight up panic. Because the first one I read, the first article I read about Windows 11's new recall was wrong. So I was just like, well.
But, well, as I was telling you, Morps, the guy that was selling it, the CEO of Windows, didn't even sell it correctly.
Well, this article actually explains it a little bit better. So, because there's a lot of people talking about this thing right now. And, of course, everybody's screaming, it's a privacy nightmare. And they're not wrong. But not for the reason that they think. So, Microsoft's announcement of a new AI-powered Windows 11 recall feature has sparked lots of concern, with many thinking that it has created massive privacy risks and new attack vectors that threat actors can exploit to steal data. True. Okay. That's not that they think that. It's true. It has done these things. The question of scale. Revealed during a Monday AI event, the feature is designed to, quote, to help, quote, recall, unquote, information you have looked at in the past, making it easily accessible via a simple search. While it's currently only available on Copilot Plus PCs running Snapdragon X ARM processors, Microsoft says they are working with Intel and AMD to create compatible CPUs. Recall works by taking a screenshot of your active window every few seconds, recording everything you do in Windows for up to 3 months by default. These snapshots will then be analyzed by the on-device neural processing unit and an AI model to extract data from the screenshot. The data will be saved in a semantic index, which allows Windows users to browse through the snapshot history or search using human language queries. So this was key number one that was missing in the first article I read about this. They're analyzing the screenshots on device. So it's not quite as bad as some of the more panic-riddled articles about this have. That's why it's only on machines that have the Snapdragon and, of course, future machines that, you know, have some sort of a neural processing or, you know, GIMP to GPU, which is what it really is, for doing the AI stuff in hardware. I suspect you could, if you could jerry-rigged that version of Windows onto one of the Mac chips, or one of the Mac was M3, M4, whatever they're up to, it probably worked there too, because the Mac chips are pretty good at AI out of the box, and I think what was one of the things they added with the M4 was more AI stuff. What I'm a little annoyed with is that with all these ARM processors, nobody's making a hybrid CPU that's got both ARM and x86 cores. But
yeah,
like two good x86 cores and then like 10 or 20 ARM cores kind of thing. Because then the ARM cores could be your GPU or an MPU, or just run the machine in low powered mode and it only kicks up the x86 when you want to run either native x86 code or something that needs the horsepower. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah. But on this, I see it processing. Okay, it's processing on my computer. But the storing 3 months of snapshots, either it's eating up a lot of the memory I don't want it eating up because I want to use it for my video games, or it's being stored off-site, which is still a security nightmare.
Well, here we go. Microsoft says all of this data is encrypted using BitLocker tied to the Windows or the user's Windows account and is not shared with other users on the same device. So let's parse what they said there. Windows account. Now, you have to remember, Microsoft recently rebranded Office 365 to Windows 365. And unless you do, you know, shenanigans when you're setting up a new Windows 11 machine, you have to set it up with a Microsoft account. So their Windows account is probably their online account, which means the BitLocker key, yes, data is encrypted. And BitLocker is actually pretty good encryption. It's actually not that hard to get encryption wrong. It's not too difficult to implement encryption properly these days. Most of the algorithms are known. It's been around for a while. There's good models out there for doing it. I don't mean developing your own encryption algorithm. I mean implementing an existing one. You know, so one of the, you know, triple DES or something. I'm probably way out of date on what you should be using, but you know, so BitLocker is fine. We've used BitLocker. But again, the key is tied to your Windows account, which means the cloud. And you're right, Madman, in that it's probably syncing all this data up via OneDrive to the cloud. Now, is Microsoft doing anything with it? Not yet.
They're probably going to be training AI models with it.
Yeah, that's what I suspect, too.
And also, I'm not going to put it past them to use that for advertising on their built-in advertising that they're already pushing in the operating system.
Yep.
So they're going to see, oh, Madman has several snapshots of where he was looking up B-movies. I wonder if he wants to see Boy Kills World.
So,
don't advertise that bag of shit, Madman.
I said B-movie. It's terrible.
While this sounds fun and interesting, it immediately raised concerns about obvious privacy risks and whether Microsoft plans on gobbling up all the data. However, Microsoft says Recall has been designed so that all the data is saved directly on the user's device in an encrypted format, providing users with complete control of the feature, including if it's enabled and what apps can take screenshots of. Quote, Recall is a key part of what makes Copilot plus PC special, and Microsoft built privacy into Recall's design from the ground up. On Copilot plus PCs powered by Snapdragon processors, you will see the Recall taskbar icon after you first activate your device. You can use that icon to open Recall settings and make choices about what snapshots Recall collects and stores on your device, i.e. it's on by default. You can limit what snapshots Recall collects, for example, and you can select specific apps or websites visited in a supported browser to filter out of your snapshots. In addition, you can pause snapshots on demand from the Recall icon in the system tray, clear some or all snapshots that have been stored, or delete all snapshots from your device. Microsoft says it will not create screenshots of edges in private windows and in other Chromium-based browsers or content protected by DRM. However, they have not confirmed whether other browsers' private modes like Firefox will be supported. In a Microsoft press event, Yousef Mitty, Corporate Vice President and Consumer Chief Marketing Officer, assures journalists that Microsoft is taking a very conservative approach with Recall. Quote, we're going to keep your Recall index private and local and secure just on the device, unquote, said Mitty. Quote, we won't use any of that information to train any AI model, and we put you completely in control with the ability to edit and delete anything that is captured, unquote. And right now, while they're rolling out the feature, I believe him. The problem,
pray we don't alter the deal.
And there it is. The problem is that is today. You get some new leadership in at Microsoft who says, well, look at all this untapped revenue. We got to be able to tap that. And they push an update to it because updates are automatic. And anybody who's used a Windows 11 machine and had it, decide it was time to update in the middle of a game or the middle of a work call or, you know, the middle of a big meeting with your CSO. Ask me how I know. you don't have a lot of control over that device anymore because Microsoft can change the code anytime they want. So, you know, they didn't used to, try to collect all your keystrokes and ink and usage data either. They just started putting it in there and it's on by default. Could you go turn it off? Sure. Could you download third-party apps to try to keep it off? Sure. But
why should you have to do all that work for something you've already fucking paid for?
And there it is.
And every time you get an update, you got to go fucking redo it.
And one other issue, I've yet to hear why I would want this. If I want to see my history, I've been able to browse history for how long with Windows? I mean, forever?
Well, yeah. I mean, at least in your web browser and, recent documents and stuff like that gets usually stored up. So here's the other thing, though. Besides just the fact that Microsoft can alter the deal whenever they want, this is a lot of data to be collecting, even if it is on the user's profile. So, okay, it's sort of the BitLocker key in the user's Windows app. Fine. If they're using their machine, they're going to be logged in, and that key is going to be available to their account. So if they get a piece of malware on their machine, let's for the moment, decide Microsoft is on the side of the angels, and they will never abuse this. Not likely, but, let's make that assumption for the moment. You still have a massive store of screenshots, collected information, and keystroke data all stored in a local database on your machine, potentially up for 3 months. Now, let's say I get a rootkit on your machine. What can I do with that information? Do I have screenshots of your bank website? Do I have screenshots of, anything we can use to blackmail you? Do I have screenshots of things that I can use to get information about where you work? Or maybe how your website works if you're a developer, or your code. I'm just saying, this opens up a whole new avenue of what happens when you get malware or spyware on a machine. Assuming Microsoft is on the side of the angels, what happens the first time you get one of those stupid fucking toolbar installers on your machine? They're not nearly as bad as they used to be, but they're still out there. It's like, oh, a little free utility to download movies off YouTube, and you get a virus. You know what I mean? I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
Or, the classic macro virus on a, Word document or PDF or whatever the fuck.
And this may actually finally start hurting them on their business side, unless they're just going to say, this feature will never be in our business applications. How many businesses is this opening up to lawsuits and problems?
Microsoft has also started to share more technical details, such as group policies that can be used to disable recall company-wide and how end users can disable the feature. So you can use group policy and turn it off, but this means your Windows admins need to know to do that. You also have another interesting thing that could be happening here. If I'm a security tool vendor, something on the lines of Observe It, or Dasm, or what's the other one? There's a handful of them now. Usually they're billed as data loss prevention tools, but essentially what it is a rootkit on the machine where I can, collect everything you're doing on the machine or generate alerts if you go to certain websites, do certain things, copy, data, whatever. Great. How many of these security tools are going to hook into this thing so that they can, instead of having to write their own API for monitoring a desktop, they can just hook into the Windows one for doing it? I don't know if that's good or bad. Actually, it might make them less obnoxious because some of those monitoring tools are, they can get be kind of rough on the end user machine, really slow it down. So maybe hooking into a Microsoft tool that already does it might be a good thing. And you know Microsoft's going to have something tied into Office 365 for corporate machines to do that kind of monitoring on corporate machines that they'll sell for stupid amounts of money.
Yeah.
Back to the article here. Microsoft's promises have not done much to reassure the cybersecurity community or its customers, with a tweet regarding this new feature receiving over 90 comments, all negative. Apparently, Schizo Ducky said future data breaches are going to be wild. Well, I agree with him. So, why are most cybersecurity experts, researchers, and analysts so worried about this feature? First and foremost, large companies have a history of exploiting users' data for their own profit, making it hard for users to trust Microsoft even when they say they won't access recall data. Users are not alone. In the United Kingdom's Data Protection Agency, the Information Commissioner's Office is also contacting Microsoft to ensure that users' data will be properly safeguarded and not used by the company. Quote, "We expect organizations to be transparent with users about how their data is being used and only process personal data to the extent that it is necessary to achieve a specific purpose. Industry must consider data protection from the outset and rigorously assess and mitigate risks to people's rights and freedoms before bringing products to market," unquote, reads a press statement from the ICO. Quote, "We are making inquiries with Microsoft to understand the safeguards in place to protect user privacy," unquote. "Even if we accept Microsoft will not access recall data, there are still massive security and privacy implications with the product. Microsoft admits the feature performs no content moderation, meaning it will gobble up anything it sees, including passwords in a password manager or your account numbers on a banking website. Or if you're in Word writing a confidential agreement, a screenshot of that content will be created too. If you have a single PC and share it with others, you may want to be careful about what pictures or videos you look at, as at a guess, those will be recorded as well. Yes, you can block apps from being screenshotted by the feature, but most people just let it run without mucking around with the feature settings. All this, not to mention, if you do go in and say, don't remember this website, don't remember this website, don't use this app, don't use this app, and you share your machine, well, there's a list of all your sensitive stuff right there. What this means is people are going to have multiple devices. They'll have their device they use for the really sick, hardcore porn that RU was telling me about earlier that I was quite surprised by just the name. And then you'll have your device for your regular porn that you know, the one, oh yeah, no, here's the vanilla stuff you admit to getting caught with so people don't think you're too weird. No?
Okay. I'm glad to fit in the too weird category.
Just seeing how well that joke would land.
Oh, I still have the same solution that I think would fix many, many things, which is we just need to write a law saying I own my data, not the person that collects it, the person that generates it. And for anyone to give up that ownership, they have to sign a notarized actual paper contract.
That notarized paper contract will be in every box shipped with every computer, and it won't work until there's a picture of it signed and notarized. That's the bad part about those kind of things, is they just won't let you use it till you agree to it. It's like the whole Microsoft won't let you use a local account anymore. You have to use a Windows account or an online account, Microsoft account.
I think that may be enough to push people to use Linux.
Mm.
The whole, it's not going to work. Well, here's Linux. It's not collecting any of your shit. Guess who you don't have to sign a contract with?
Yep. So if a threat actor or malware company or malware compromised your device, all the data would already be decrypted by BitLocker, making it accessible to the hacker. Blah, 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 blah. Look at historically what happened with InfoStealer malware, malicious software. Yeah, okay. In other words, malicious threat actor gains access to the system.
It's taxing resources on my computer for a feature that doesn't help me.
I mean, the only thing it would help you with is if you routinely forget what you were looking at and want to be able to just search anything that was on your screen. And I can think of some people who that would actually be a helpful feature for. But not many.
And I'm thinking anyone in that business probably already has autosave on and a few other things.
So, and again, like you said, for the most part, it's web pages you're going to be caring about, and you can already pull your browser history unless you, you know, routinely clear that or, you know, have it set just not to save it or always use private mode. But, which I did have somebody ask me one time, you know, what's it matter since your ISP can still record everything? And the best answer I could give is if you're on something like a Raspberry Pi or some other limited memory device, by putting it to privacy mode, you're just not writing the cache to disk, so you're not going to tear up your SD card quite so fast. I just thought that was a good answer. That's all. So
yeah, we can see that.
But anyways, so like a whole bunch of the features Microsoft has hot glued onto the side of Windows in the last decade, be aware of it, turn it off, and use whatever, you know, Shut Up 10 or whatever your third-party utility is to, you know, try to clean up your machine. Because, and Madman's got a really good point, that these things, all this crap, all this data collection, I mean, that's burning bandwidth, it's burning storage on your device, it's just, you know, burning compute time. That's a lot of resources going on in the background for things that you aren't, as the owner of the computer, interested in.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit me. I mean, at least whenever Clippy was being fucking annoying, it was something that was supposed to help me with my writing or my grammar or whatever the fuck.
It looks like you're trying to write a manifesto. Would you like some help with that?
Yeah, I mean, he may have been completely wrong about everything or many things, but it was something that was meant to help me. I don't see how this is meant to help me. They've gone from making a product that I will say I thought was wonderful. It makes it where you don't need to learn command line. You can operate, anyone can operate a computer no matter how fucking retarded they are. Play your video games, watch your movies, whatever. Browse the internet. And now they've taken that great product that they stole from Xerox and have turned it to complete shit.
They did not steal Windows from Xerox. They stole PC-DOS from that dude in Seattle and wrote Windows based off of Xerox. They didn't steal it, but they did Xerox it.
They did Xerox it.
Sorry, okay. That was a long way to go for that joke.
It works.
Go ahead, are you?
I had nothing on that.
Oh, I thought I heard you try to come in there.
Microsoft is Microsoft. You're not going to change their ways.
Yeah, I don't know, because they've changed their ways. So I think it could be changed back. I just don't think they're going to.
Well,
you may be their customer, but they fucking hate you.
And that's, I think that's part of the problem. I don't know when the last time I was technically their customer, because they're not selling to me. They're selling to a vendor that's throwing shit on a computer, and I've been too lazy to remove it.
Well, and you had a good argument for not removing it for a long time, and that a lot of stuff you would want to do wouldn't work on alternative operating systems. But, I mean, the Steam Deck kind of blows 90% of that argument out of the water.
Yeah, since most of the games I play are on Steam now.
A lot of the, well, that doesn't, not every game works on SteamOS, but a lot of them do. And, of course, you know, there's still a lot of hardware out there that just doesn't have good Linux support. But it's getting better. But, yeah, it's the crazy part is that it's actually quite viable to use Linux as a desktop these days. It really is. But nobody wants to take the time to do it because learning something new is a pain in the butt. And honestly, it was audio software, but I haven't really been doing much with audio software. What keeps at least one Windows device for me right now is CAD. Because the CAD package I like to use is Windows only. Dead serious, if they had a Mac version, I probably would have moved everything over to that I can't do on Linux onto a Mac at this point. But because I have an older M1 Mini. It's a decent little machine. It's running Mac OS and, you know, Apple account and everything that implies, but you know, I mean, it's not a bad little computer. I don't much care for Mac OS, but I would have gotten over it because I'm getting so sick of Windows shit. But my CAD software doesn't run on it. I need that. So what do? Bitch and moan, I guess.
And point out to the world the evils they need to be aware of.
I try. I don't think we have a lot of listeners anymore, so I don't know how many people I'm pointing it out to, but, you know, I try. There's like 4 people in the IRC tonight. Alhazard, myself, Sardonyx, and she. So, but I had a hard time getting the IRC, so they might have had a net split or something.
What's the next story?
Next story is from the independent.co.uk. Throw that link in there. The internet is disappearing, a new study has suggested, as web pages and online content are lost. The web is often thought of as a place where content lasts forever, but vast swaths of it are being lost as pages are deleted or moved, according to new research. Of the web pages that existed in 2013, for instance, 38% are now lost. Even newer pages are disappearing. 8% of pages that existed in 2023 are no longer available. Those pages tend to disappear when they are deleted or moved. That happens on otherwise functional websites, the study from Pew Research Center indicated. But rather than happening when whole websites disappear, the effect means that vast amounts of news and important reference content are disappearing. Some 23% of news pages include at least one broken link, and 21% of government websites, it said, and 54% of Wikipedia pages include a link in their references that no longer exists. 54% of Wikipedia pages have a broken link in their references. That's a problem. Now you can't check the articles. Much of the same effect is happening on social media. A fifth of tweets disappear from the site within months of being posted. The study was completed by gathering random samples of almost 1 million web pages taken from Common Crawl, a service that archives some parts of the internet. Researchers then looked to see whether those pages continue to exist between 2013 and 2023. Found that 25% of all pages collected between 2013 and 2023 were no longer available. Of those, 16% of pages came from a website that continues to exist, and 9% were located on websites that no longer exist at all. So, I guess the big question is, does that matter?
On the Wikipedia ones, I would kind of wonder which links you're talking about, because I also know it's Wikipedia.
Oh, it'd be down in the bottom of the article, the references?
Yeah, but I could be linking to a Tumblr page to back up my post on Wikipedia. They're not stringent on what you consider a source. So those links being broken, I don't think is hurting anyone. Now, if I'm linking to, I don't know, a peer-reviewed article trying to make a point, and that's disappearing, then we could be losing legitimate knowledge. Or at least access to legitimate knowledge. I guess not legitimate, useful would be a better word.
Well, this is where you get into like things like the archive.org, Wayback Machine, things like that. But, I mean, there was that archive that went up a while back of all the old GeoCities pages at one point. And all that stuff's gone. I know there was a fairly large archive file floating around, but I mean, so I don't know. I'm trying to decide, because I mean, you think about it, how much of the stuff that's on the internet is just crap, right? I mean, it's just
a huge chunk of it. And of those sites that they're saying are disappearing, I wonder how many businesses have decided it's not worth maintaining my own separate website for my business when so much of my customer base is on one of these social media sites.
Yeah,
so
Facebook,
instead of
Twitter,
having, you know, mechanicsareawesome.com for my garage, I just have a Facebook page. I'm still getting a similar or comparable number of hits. It's referenced by Google. And I don't have to worry about a hosting fee.
I miss old school forums, because those things were searchable, could find stuff in them. nice, you know, reference, and usually they were fairly topical. Most of those are gone. Everybody moved them onto Reddit, and then Reddit went stupid. I guess I could put one up on Galaxy 15, but then you got to worry about it getting popped or full of spam and other bullshit.
Maintaining it yourself.
Yeah. And that's the other problem with, you know, maintaining your own stuff is you got to maintain your own stuff.
So my view on the problem is, why is it happening? Because if it's the whole, my business site's going to this social media page, yeah, it may suck because I don't use social media, but it's not a problem per se.
Well, then there's the things like old news articles from like newspapers and things like that. It's like eventually they're going to go in and prune it because it's like, you know, server disk space does cost something. It's not that expensive, but it costs something. And eventually it's like, oh, disk is full. Let's go delete everything from 2013 back or, you know, whatever.
And on that one, I wonder, because we no longer have microfiche on a lot of stuff. And is anyone archiving old newspaper anymore? Those can be primary sources, especially for future events. Well, not future, or for, you know, future historians looking back at past events.
Oh, that's a question. I don't know, because you had a lot of publications that don't have a print publication at all anymore. It's all online. And even if they're archiving it, are they archiving it in a way that will be useful in 10 years? How many people, and don't say me, I don't count in this, how many people have the ability to read a zip drive?
I do.
You have the old zip disk floating around too? Okay. I got a box of the damn things. But
I got like two or three, but I haven't touched them since my first build.
A zip disk? No. I can still access floppy and CDs and DVDs.
Yeah, but most companies were backing up onto whatever proprietary tape format that came with the server they bought.
Oh.
Different style cartridges, different style drives. You can go on eBay and find tape drives and tapes, but, I mean, I don't know. That's the problem, is how much of the, you know, how many archive formats from 10 or 15 years ago, and in technology terms, that's like the Windows XP era, right? I mean, how many technology formats from them are considered dead today, and you would have to go find secondhand hardware and hope that it worked if you needed to read one of those archives?
Yeah, and then how many of those are even still being maintained? Because a big number of archives, at least for my point on the newspaper articles, were local newspapers that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's and how many of them are going to say, oh, well, we dump the database and back it up on Amazon. Oh, well, good luck. I mean, you know, so what happens when you stop paying for that S3 bucket? I mean,
and that's a way, if you wanted to look at, I don't know, San Francisco in the 1970s, going through their local newspaper archives would be your best bet on finding out what happened at that time. Or even something, someplace maybe more important and less documented, what was happening around Fort Campbell.
Yeah.
There used to be a few dozen small newspapers that could have answered that question, and now they're gone, and any archives they had on the internet's probably gone.
Yeah, I don't know. In that case, you're just hoping some IT guy took all the archives home with him and stuck them in a closet or something.
Yeah, now those losses I would consider major, but some business migrating to social media instead of maintaining its own website, nothing lost.
Okay. Well, like I said, just kind of interesting thought there. Next up is from Tom's Hardware. TSMC.
Speaking of a local business.
Huh?
Speaking of a local business.
TSMC is one of the largest chip makers globally. even beating out Intel and Samsung by revenue numbers. And its location in Taiwan is a potential hotspot between the U.S. and China, especially as China, the PRC, considers Taiwan, the ROC, an integral part of its territory. With the regional superpower not discounting a military invasion of the island, the U.S. wants to ensure that TSMC's chip-making capabilities won't fall into the PRC's hands. Thus, reports indicate that TSMC's EUV machines made by ASML, good God, that's word alphabet soup here, have a remote kill switch fitted for security. They want TSMC's machines to have a self-destruct button.
Oh, and they want it remote. So you're going to give China the ability to shut down chip manufacturing because you're paranoid about China shutting down chip manufacturing.
Just last year, U.S. Congressman Seth Moulton suggested that the U.S. might bomb TSMC facilities in Taiwan if China invaded. However, the Taiwanese government said it would defend the company against any form of aggression from anyone, including the United States. Fair enough. The Taiwan Security Bureau even said that destroying TSMC's facilities is an unnecessary move, as producing high-end chips requires more than just the factories. TSMC, quote, TSMC needs to integrate global elements before producing high-end chips, unquote, said Ching Mong Tong, Director General of the Taiwanese.
That's not a real name.
As what the article says, man. Chinming-tong. Chinming-tong.
Okay, whatever.
Director General of the Taiwanese National Security Bureau. I'm sorry, I don't have the accent to say that name correctly. So, quote, without components or equipment like ASML's lithography equipment, without key components, there's no way TSMC can continue its production, unquote. Nevertheless, geopolitical issues typically go beyond the business sense. So even if China knows that capturing these advanced foundries from Taiwan and the U.S. is a futile endeavor, the thought of depriving its primary competitor of the latest chips could be enough motivations to execute a special military operation to liberate TSMC. This is especially true as the U.S. said that a Chinese seizure of the company and its facilities would be devastating for the American economy. Because of this threat, TSMC and ASML currently the only supplier of tools that would make cutting-edge 2-nanometer chips have added a kill switch that will disable TSMC's EUV machines remotely. According to Bloomberg, the latter added this feature to assuage U.S. fears that the former chip-making capabilities could fall into the wrong hands if war breaks out in East Asia. The U.S. has been hard at work trying to limit China's technological progress, especially in the semiconductor industry. Washington has blacklisted several Chinese companies from acquiring advanced tech due to fears that the communist PLA will use them to further its military might. The White House also recently placed severe tariffs on Chinese imports to protect its investments with the CHIPS Act. Nevertheless, Chinese President Xi Jinping is still adamant that it can continue its technological development with or without U.S. sanctions. Although the country still lags behind in cutting-edge processors, China is already a powerhouse in legacy chip production. Furthermore, the Chinese government is continuously supporting local companies to develop homegrown tech that makes them resilient to external actions. Where was I? I scrolled too much. Aside from ASML and TSMC's latest move to protect American interests, the U.S. has also invested billions of dollars in the latter to move its chip productions to North America. TSMC is also building facilities in Japan, which could help protect it from China's ambitions in Taiwan. All of these moves are part of the U.S.-China trade war, as the former attempts to limit the latter's ambitions in becoming a global power. While Washington's moves are slowing Beijing's efforts to achieve technological superiority, it's also pushing the Asian power to innovate and work around the limits it's facing. While China's homegrown chips have currently several generations behind Intel and AMD's products, they're taking leaps and strides in advancements, and we may soon face Chinese technology that is similar or even superior to that of what the West has to offer. Considering that China essentially stole ARM, the Chinese division of ARM just declared itself independent of the rest of ARM a couple of years ago, and we talked about it on Decking. That's not surprising that they're, you know, really good at making, you know, ARM chips that are a few years old, because they effectively stole it all and made it their own company. So, yeah. I love the self-destruct on the chip manufacturing.
It's a bit extreme.
It's a pulp.
Yeah, you don't put a remote self-destruct on something to protect it, because all you're doing is giving your enemy another way of blowing it up.
Yep.
I just Well, I'm just thinking, well, in sci-fi, all the ships have a self-destruct. No, it's not really a self. It's not like they've got a bomb in it. It's like they've got a way to make the reactor of the ship go critical or something. Feed it bad instructions to blow it up. But with these things, I mean, what you got a hand grenade in the bottom of every machine? What are you doing here?
Remember the 1987 hackers can detonate your computer over the phone?
Just by whistling.
An actual article.
Wasn't that the plot to like a Bond movie? Is they could just dial your computer and make it explode?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Possibly.
Maybe I miss. Maybe it wasn't Bond.
I
Maybe it
mean,
was something else.
if you've never seen Captain Crunch testimony to the Congress, that's worth a listen. Out of touch the fucking old dudes were even then.
Well, as you say, I just self-destruct in the chip manufacturing facility. I mean, I get it, I do, but at that point, that's when you look Xi Jinping. You just send the messenger to Xi Jinping. It's like if you make a move against Taiwan, we'll nuke it, and just call it a day.
I mean, it's not like America's ever, destroyed something of value that would ruin other nations on purpose just because they could.
It's like we'll nuke it out of spite. Just
I'm looking at Nord Stream pipeline. Just saying.
to see what their reaction is. It's like, wait a minute, what? It's like, yeah, we'll just nuke it. We'll just be done with it. It's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
And China would be just as happy with that.
Yeah, they would.
Because guess who's outsourced pretty much all of their chip manufacturing? That'd be
Well, dude,
us.
okay, America says, okay, fuck you, we're gonna nuke your chips if you don't do X. And China just says, good luck with your insulin development, and let's just say we're gonna stop sending antidepressants. No more Valium.
Oh, that would be so good for us. That'd be great
Dude,
fun. Not a problem.
imagine if fuck you'd have two-thirds of the women in America losing their shit without their daily Valium.
They would get better so much faster. That shit's fucking them up more than it's helping them.
I'm not saying it's good stuff, Madman. I'm just saying, have you ever seen a chick go off her meds? Like, especially when
So it
they're
would
not
be a couple
really.
weeks of terrible, followed by the rest of her life being better. Now, the big problem I'm seeing with the whole we'll nuke Taiwan's chips. Like, cool. So we don't have the best chips anymore. They can't get the best chips, but they're already making the second best chips. So by us nuking it, they now have the best chips.
So you're saying it would not be the deterrent, I'm assuming it would be. I'm
No.
making the threat. I'm not actually wanting to. I don't want to nuke Taiwan. They seem like nice people.
Oh yeah, I mean they're what China would have been had we not forsaken our Chinese allies. And stopped the whole Red Revolution, but we were like, "Well, we're not going to. Y'all can all just hide on Taiwan."
I was thinking
But
the
yeah.
threat of it would keep them from doing it, but I guess not. So,
No,
fuck.
they would go from not having the number one chips in the world to having the number one chips in the world, and the number one chips are just how many ever years behind what they currently are. But they would become number one. Or at least parity, because they'd still be competing with South Korea.
Okay. Well, I need to rethink my global policies then.
Yeah, I mean, Silicon Shield is good for Taiwan because it's like if we drop off, good luck making your F-22 stealth fighter because we make all the chips for it. You want to protect us, but that's not, you know, anything preventing China from overtaking us, because if they deny us our technological superiority, they've denied it no matter whether they gain it or not.
Yeah.
Or they just put an embargo on Taiwan. Nothing in, nothing out.
Oh, that would be them attempting to deny us that, and we would be running that embargo within minutes. We would have how many ever carrier fleets exist over there trying to break that.
Last 2 years, madman, your carrier means nothing to my $120 racing drone.
Don't have enough $120 racing drones to take out a battleship, much less a carrier.
Oh, I can spend $40,000 on racing drones, and you will spend close to $500 million in weaponry to shoot it down.
With that many racing drones, we could literally let it hit the infrastructure of the ship and it'd be fine. You're needing more than the $40 racing drone to damage the infrastructure on a battleship.
I don't need to damage it. I just
hit the munitions on the ship.
I just have to annoy it.
You're annoying it. Okay. Now, the cruise missiles are taking out how many of your cities? Name them.
I just think the whole
the drone warfare is good against infantry. Okay, I've listed the length of it right now, unless you're going with predator drones.
What about Rods from God? Are we still exploring that? Because that seemed like a fun...
Well, we did take the embargo off militarizing space last week. That's back on the table.
Hmm. That seemed like an interesting technology. We're just going to drop a steel rod from orbit and see what it does.
But yeah, well, that's an escalation neither side's going to do is blockade Taiwan.
I think SpaceX is the only one launching, isn't it?
Wasn't Virgin? Didn't they have something going?
No, I think they backed out ages ago. They went broke. Hmm. Well, they're not broke. It just costs too much money. I know Bezos is pretty much out now, isn't he?
I thought Bezos was still Elon's big competitor. They're still measuring penises.
But I think you're right that SpaceX is the only one that's routinely doing stuff. I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, no, interesting war game out. What role Musk would have in the next war?
Mostly pointing and laughing, I would imagine.
I'm thinking the rods from God won't be very effective until we're out mining rocks. Because it would be, I don't know how expensive it would be just getting them up into space to drop them.
I'm not thinking of that. I'm thinking of retooling Tesla for war.
Oh, he'll be major because they're one of the bases that are actually in the U.S.
I was using a rod from God as a great way to take out a ship, but, you know.
Waste for a ship. But, yeah, are we looking at the next Henry Ford?
Yeah, they'd be the next Ford. And it wouldn't just be a ship. You would be targeting carrier groups with that. Yeah. And that I wouldn't consider it a waste for a carrier group. You're taking out that ship and all of its supporting vessels.
I mean,
nice rod from God is a nuke without the radiation.
Let's be really real here. The only reason we know about the nukes is because they used a couple of them in World War II. What crazy ass shit do you think they developed in the meantime?
There's a reason Reagan was pushing it.
So, anyways, that's enough geopolitics. Let's do something more silly. This article is from TechCrunch. Spyware found on U.S. hotel check-in computers.
Oh, and they always want a credit card so they can charge you after you wreck the fucking Rome.
Consumer-grade spyware app has been found running on the check-in systems of at least 3 Wyndham hotels across the United States, TechCrunch has learned. The app called PC Tattletale. Really? They named it PC Tattletale? That's great. Stealthily and continually captured screenshots of the hotel booking system, which contained... That's what Microsoft's adding as a feature now. Yeah. Which contains guest details and consumer information. Okay, yes, I did put the story in here just so I could make that joke. Which contained guest details and consumer information. Thanks to a security flaw in the spyware, these screenshots are available to anyone on the internet, not just the spyware's intended users. While this is the most recent example of consumer-grade spyware exposing sensitive information because of a security flaw in the spyware itself, it's also the second known time that PC Tattletale has exposed screenshots of the devices on which the app is installed. Several other spyware apps in recent years have had security bugs or misconfigurations that expose the private and personal data of unwitting device owners, in some cases prompting action by... Okay, if the spyware people can't get it right... Because they make how much money from this stuff? And Microsoft is just kind of tacking it on the side. You think they're going to get it right? Anyways. PC Tattletale allows whomever controls it to remotely view the target's Android or Windows device and its data from anywhere in the world. PC Tattletale's website says the app, quote, runs invisibly in the background and on their workstations and cannot be detected, unquote. Bullshit. There's always a connection out. There's always something running on the machine. It can be detected. It might take a lot of work, but it can be detected. But the bug means that anyone on the internet who understands how the security flaw works can download the screenshots captured by the spyware directly from PC Tattletale servers. Security researcher Eric Daigle told TechCrunch that he found the compromised hotel check-in systems as part of an investigation of consumer-grade spyware. These apps are often referred to as stalkerware for their ability to use to track people, including spouses and domestic partners, without knowledge or consent. Daigle said he attempted to warn PC Tattletale of the issue, but the company has not responded, and the flaw remains unfixed at the time of publication. Daigle disclosed limited details of PC Tattletale's leaking screenshot bug in a short blog post without providing specifics so as not to help bad actors take advantage of the flaw. Daigle said that the PC Tattletale periodically takes new screenshots of the device that the app is running on, sometimes every few seconds. The screenshots from 2 Wyndham hotels seen by TechCrunch show the names and reservation details of guests on a web portal provided by tech giant Sabre. The screenshots of the web portals also display guests' partial payment card numbers. Another screenshot showed access to a 3rd Wyndham hotel's check-in system, which at the time was logged into Booking.com's administration portal used to manage guest reservation. It is not known who planted the app or why the app was planted. For example, if hotel employees were tricked into installing it or if the hotel owner intended the spyware to be used to monitor employee behavior. PC Tattletale markets itself as a way to monitor employees, among other uses. So, anyways, it goes on and on. But, yeah, this thing's a piece of commercial spyware. And, yeah, they've got a problem where, if you know, I'm betting it's URL stuffing. It's usually what it is for this kind of shit. Means a guessable URL that you can play with the cookies in your browser through a proxy or whatever and get their server to spit back stuff it probably shouldn't. So.
I love the name.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next article is from Bleeping Computer. The American Radio Relay League warns it has suffered a cyber attack in which it disrupted its IT systems and online operations, including email and logbook of the world, which for people into ham radio, this is a problem because they can't go log their FT8 contacts and get their all states worked and other things like that. ARRL is the National Association for Amateur Radio in the United States, representing amateur radio interests to government regulatory bodies, providing technical advice, and promoting events and educational programs to enthusiasts around the country. And if you are wanting to get into radio, their books are probably about the best resource there is. Quote, "We are in the process of responding to a serious incident involving access to our network and headquarters-based systems. Several services, including Logbook of the World and the ARRL Learning Center, are affected," unquote. explained ARL in the press release. Actually, the biggest thing here is that people who do their radio license testing through the ARRL can't submit test results. So if you go pass the test to get a ham radio license and you do it through the ARRL, you can't submit it because it's down right now because they got popped. So people can't get new radio licenses through the ARRL at the moment. So I'm not going to go on with the rest of the article. There's not that really that much to it. It's just they got popped. So
that kind of sucks. It's holding up people getting their licenses.
Yes, it does. Some people might argue that, so what? It's ham radio. Who cares? But, you know, there's a lot going on with ham these days. There's some of the newer digital modes and, you know, still annoying to prevent people from being able to use it like that. And then finally, last story I have for tonight is from RU. He sent me this, abc.net.au. Southern Hemisphere's first cryogenically frozen client at rest in regional New South Wales facility. Somebody froze themselves. I barely even looked at the article. I just threw it in at the end for fun. Philip Rhodes has spent 14 years waiting to give dead people a second chance at life. Those years of preparation have finally been put to the test. Southern Cryonics, which operates the Southern Hemisphere's first known cryonics facility, has just announced it has cryogenically frozen its first client at the Holbrook facility. A Sydney man who died this month in his 80s has become what the country refers to as Patient One, or the company refers to as Patient One. Company said it was a Southern Hemisphere first and a complex process that has Mr. Rhodes losing sleep. Quote, it was very stressful, unquote, Southern Cryonics facility manager said. They got a picture of the guy here. Quote, that was what was keeping me awake for a week because there were a number of different procedures to go through for different days, and there were a number of situations that might have gone wrong if we hadn't prepared properly, unquote. The Southern Cryonics team has been ready and preparing to accept bodies this year, but their first client was slightly unexpected. Quote, there were a couple of other people who were existing members who we thought might be likely candidates for being first, but it turns out it was someone who wasn't an existing member, unquote, Mr. Rhodes says. Quote, his family rang up out of the blue, and we had about a week to prepare and get organized, unquote. I love the picture of the giant liquid nitrogen tank that the dude's hauling out there to do this. Mr. Rhodes said that the team had tested all the cryonics equipment and were mostly prepared, quote, but it's still a little bit different when you're doing a real case, unquote, he said. The first client died on the morning of May the 12th at 2024 at a hospital in Inner Sydney. The 10-hour process of preserving his body in the hope of bringing it back brought back to life began immediately. Mr. Rhodes had been waiting patiently in Sydney for news of the client's expected death and quickly caught a train to the hospital, stopping to collect bags of ice from a store. Why are you buying bags of ice from a grocery store if you're a cryonic facility?
And he's taking public transport.
The client's death certificate was swiftly produced, and his body was moved from the into the hospital's cold room and packed in ice to bring it down to about 6 degrees Celsius. That's what he bought the ice for, was to go into the morgue. God. The company said the client was then moved to A. O'Hare Funeral Directors at Lionheart, where doctors and perfusionists who operate a hard lung bypass machine worked to pump a liquid, which acts as a type of antifreeze, through the body to help preserve the cells and lower the body's temperature. He was then wrapped in a special type of sleeping bag and packed in dry ice while his body temperature was brought down to around minus 80 degrees Celsius. It doesn't say that these guys ever figured out how to solve the cell damage caused by ice crystals.
That's going to be the big problem.
The client was then transferred to Southern Cryonics Holbrook facility next day, where he remained on dry ice until the delivery of liquid nitrogen arrived. His temperature was brought down to around minus 200 degrees Celsius in a computer-controlled cooling chamber before being placed in a pod and lowered upside down into a dewar tank, a specialized vacuum storage vessel similar to a giant thermos, which can hold up to four people. Quote, we went through using crash test dummies and other things to make it as real as possible for all the testings that we went through. So all of the groundwork paid off, unquote, Mr. Rhodes said. What, you couldn't get actual cadavers? People donate their bodies to science all the time. Why were you using crash test dummies?
The cadavers are really scooped up by medical schools pretty quickly. And after they're done with them, they get sent to boneyards.
The process cost the client $170,000 with additional fees for medical teams to help with the preservation process. It also highlighted the challenges of working with patients outside metropolitan areas. Quote, with people who are involved, all the different professionals, it's much easier if it happens in Sydney or possibly Melbourne, unquote, Mr. Rhodes said. Quote, if you start going out into the regional areas and other states, it starts becoming more difficult, unquote. So, okay, I'm going to stop reading here because it just goes on and on. And this professor they're talking to certainly looks like somebody who, I'm sorry, you know, the vacant stare and the crossed eyes don't really help with his case. I don't know what else to say on this. The guy took a train and bought the ice at a grocery store to start the
initiative. Yeah, and you're trusting him for your life ever after.
And they still haven't solved the number one problem of cryonics in that ice crystals in the cells destroy the cell membranes. You can't unfreeze them without them effectively falling apart.
All right.
Gonna be like the Babaverse where it's like no you're not alive anymore, we copied your brain into a computer because we just had your head on. What happens the first time the power goes out with these guys?
I'm just thinking oops, like say you die today, they have a massive breakthrough in a week and suddenly they figure out by the end of the year they can reanimate you, next year they reanimate you and you've only gone a year into the future. Stop.
Yeah, because the objective is to avoid death. They'd be just as happy. But if they've set it up properly, they have backup generators.
I'm just saying.
The question is, how long can they go on those backup generators?
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, I mean, nothing would be worse than coming into the office on a Monday morning at a cryonics facility and going, what's that smell? Just.
I don't know. Who's going to sue you? Your client's already dead.
What happens when this company goes out of business?
There'll be human sickles that need to be disposed of.
Hey, there's going to be a heap of bodies up for sale.
Oh, God.
That cadaver shortage that hospitals may be having to train people will be alleviated slightly. You just need to thaw them out first.
Oh, somebody's been keeping their cool pops in here. It's not right.
And I love it. The dude's 80. If we were going to be thawing people out, I'm thinking they would want someone that would be part of the workforce, not part of the retirement community. So I could see some desperate parent wanting to freeze a kid that passed away too soon. Or if you're diagnosed with cancer and dying in your 30s or 40s, maybe having your body frozen. If you're a geriatric, embrace it. Have a nice traditional funeral. Get buried or cremated and stuck in fireworks. Have your friends celebrate the life that you should have had. Because you should have lived a good life by the time you're 80. If you didn't, it's your own damn fault.
Man, I think you need to think through the freezing of children thing. Okay, say little Billy gets struck by a car and he dies. But they get the ability to bring him back in, say, 100 years. Little Billy comes back in 100 years. Where's my mommy and daddy? Yeah, they died fucking, 40 years ago. You'd be this kid alone in the world. Yeah.
He's also gonna have great origin story for a fantasy novel.
He's also going to have the stigma of fuck his parents being dead and him being a fucking zombie. So let's face it, we're just going to call them zombies.
Well, I guess they're kind of assuming if you have the technology to reanimate a corpse, you can also, you probably have the technology to make them young again.
I firm belief you got one life, live it the best you can, and then, as Madman said, celebrate at the end and later.
Right now, your best bet at avoiding death is to make it long enough for prosthetic bodies a la Ghost in the Shell to make it. Probably not for any of us, but...
I don't know. Maybe. I've seen some interesting theories on gene therapy. Current body could last forever, or damn near close to it.
Oh, yeah. The telomeres thing?
Do you really want the top 1% to live another 1,000 fucking years? Because let's face it, they're the only people going to be able to afford it.
Well, I mean, you look at government today and, you know, swapping their really blood for the blood of children is only going so far, so...
Do you really want Nancy Pelosi to have another 200 years? Do you really?
And are you... Can you name one medical treatment that after a generation or less wasn't available to everyone?
That's if you believe that the world's going to keep turning and existing in the way it is.
I have no evidence that it's not. And this is assuming that humans are as super greedy as you can possibly be. Because you know who has more money than the super rich? That would be everyone else. Reed, the reason McDonald's became multi-billionaires wasn't as they sold one cheeseburger for $1 billion. They sell millions of them with a few cent profit.
For a dollar, yeah. Eh.
So the whole, only the rich will live forever? No, once we live forever, just about everyone will.
But do you really want to live forever?
No, but I wouldn't mind perpetual youth. Because you're still going to die.
Hadouken! I thought we had hit an ending point in that conversation, but I might have been wrong.
You know me and Madman, we'll go back and forth for hours, dude. Let's just tidy this up.
What I have for you in Dojo tonight is Hacker Target put together a nice little script and guide on taking in-map results and displaying them in Grafana, which would be really easy to automate with a recurring script just running all the time to continuously update it. So if you're trying to monitor a network, seems like a nice and easy way to do it. So I thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah.
If you want to live forever, I don't recommend cryonics, but I got nothing else. Anyways, that's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream we're always working on. Peer decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, BBS. Madman, closing thoughts.
I don't think there's going to be a future in cryonics, but for anyone that watched Space and Above and Beyond, I think tanks are going to be a thing pretty soon.
All right, are you? Close us out.
Good news. I'm going to die one day.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
God hates Australia.
Security, she's got a break.